You know that ache deep in your chest after like a really bad betrayal, or that sting of rejection that just kind of follows you around sometimes. We've all known that sort of really deep emotional pain, haven't we? And in those moments, wouldn't it be incredible to just have a guide, a way to figure out what's happening and how to find solid ground again?
Absolutely. That longing for understanding, for a path forward when you're really hurting,
It's tough there.
well, it's fundamentally human, isn't it? We're wired to want to heal, to find resilience somehow.
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do today. We're diving deep into Terry Jordan's book, On the Other Side of Your Pain, Hope for the Hurting. Our mission really is to pull out the key insights, the actionable stuff from her experiences, to give you maybe a more direct route to understanding your own pain and starting to move past it.
Yeah, and it's really important to get this source. It's deeply personal.
Right.
The author, Terry Jordan, she's sharing her own journey, you know, the lessons she learned the hard way, navigating some really significant emotional hits.
So it's coming from lived experience, not like a textbook or formal clinical training.
Exactly. Her insights come from her experience, grounded in actually overcoming this stuff, which offers a different kind of perspective.
Right. And for you, listening in, someone who likes to get knowledge quickly, thoroughly, you're probably looking for practical strategies, those aha moments, yeah, not just theory. So this deep dive is designed to be that shortcut, helping you grasp how you might move beyond pain.
So we'll be looking at a few core themes from the book, things like the impact of betrayal and rejection.
It's
huge. And the power of our thoughts, how much they really shape everything.
And how to actually take control of your mind, right? Plus, how our past, our beliefs, influence things.
Yeah, and forgiveness, that's a big one. And then finding purpose, finding hope. For her, that includes a spiritual connection.
Okay, let's start unpacking that. Let's talk about pain itself, especially that really sharp pain of betrayal.
Well, the author makes it clear from her own life, betrayal by people close to you, that can be an exceptionally deep wound. She talks about facing repeated betrayal and her journey from just surviving it to actually thriving.
And she uses that analogy, the tears of a clown, you know, smiling on the outside, but hurting deep down. That whole idea of keeping up appearances, even when you're falling apart inside, I think a lot of people can relate to that.
Oh, absolutely. That image really speaks to how we often try to mask our pain, which, you know, maybe helps short term, but hiding it all the time, that creates its own problems down the line.
She also talks about her relationship with her mother. It sounds like it wasn't super affectionate openly, but her mom was someone she went to for advice. There was this underlying hope, maybe for something deeper, more open.
That really highlights how even in relationships that offer some support, you can still have unmet needs, you know, still yearn for more connection.
Yeah. And here's something that really jumped out at me. She has this realization later on that a lot of the painful situations she went through, they were actually consequences of her own choices.
Ooh. That's a tough one. A really powerful, often difficult thing to face, isn't it? But admitting our own role, honestly, it can be incredibly empowering. It shifts you from feeling like just a victim to seeing where you had agency, where you could make different choices, maybe.
And even after her mother passed away, she mentions gaining new insights about past relationships. But it almost opened up more questions, like this merry-go-round feeling, constantly searching for answers, for resolution.
Yeah, that really shows how processing grief, understanding the past, it's not always linear, is it? New perspectives pop up and it sends you back into reflection mode, trying to make sense of it all.
Right. Okay, let's pivot a bit. Let's talk about the mind, the power of our thoughts. This is a huge theme in the book.
Huge. She emphasizes how our brain, conscious, subconscious, all of it, it's constantly soaking things up from the moment we're born, words we hear, things we see. This constant programming shapes how we see everything.
Which leads to a really crucial point.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be kind of intentional about what we let into our conscious mind. Because what we focus on there really sinks in and shapes our subconscious beliefs, doesn't it?
Precisely. She talks about that internal chatter, that voice in our heads that's always going. And the subconscious mind, it's always listening to that inner talk. And critically, it tends to believe what we tell ourselves.
She even brings in that Einstein quote, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." It just perfectly highlights why we need to step back and look at our thought patterns when we feel stuck.
It's such a great quote for this. It really drives home that to break free from pain or problems, you often need a new perspective. You have to challenge the old ways of thinking.
And we all have this tendency, don't we, to sort of put on a brave face, mask the reality of what we're feeling. But she argues that real freedom comes when you face the truth, even if it's uncomfortable at first.
Yeah, masking might feel safer momentarily, but it stops you from dealing with the real issues, right? It hinders actual healing.
She also points out that running away from problems, it usually doesn't work because the pain is so often internal, you just take it with you. But she reframes challenges, sees them as opportunities for growth, not just roadblocks, but catalysts.
That's a really empowering way to look at it, isn't it? Seeing difficulties as chances to learn and grow builds resilience. It helps you develop better ways to cope down the road.
And she gives this personal example, a hurtful comment from a relative. Instead of getting defensive, she paused, reconsidered, and found peace just letting it go. That's taking control of your response.
It's a great little story because it shows exactly how you can choose a different reaction. That ability to reframe, to release negativity. It's key to managing your emotions and moving on from hurt.
Which brings us right back to this core idea. If you want to heal a wounded heart, you've got to start with your thought life. It's like the mind is the soil where emotional healing needs to happen.
Exactly. Thoughts and emotions are so deeply linked. By consciously working on those negative or limiting thought patterns, you create a healthier inner space for yourself, a space where recovery can actually happen.
Okay, let's shift again. Another major theme. Rejection and how it messes with our sense of who we are, our identity. The author shares some really raw stuff here.
Yeah, she talks about feeling out of place as a child, different from her family, like she didn't quite belong. And those early feelings of being an outsider, wow, they can stick with you, affecting your self-worth for years.
And that specific memory, oh, it's heartbreaking. Being excluded by her grandmother from getting Christmas gifts along with her cousin, it just shows how deeply those childhood rejections can cut and how long the scars can last.
It really does. It highlights how vulnerable kids are. Things like that, even if they seem small to an adult looking back, can create huge emotional wounds around self-worth and belonging.
Then, fast forward to age 19, she gets this phone call from the same grandmother. And the grandmother actually questions who her father is. Can you even imagine the shock?
Oh my goodness. To have your fundamental understanding of your family just shattered like that, especially at 19. That's incredibly destabilizing.
And it didn't stop there. Later, a DNA test confirmed it. The man she knew as Danny her whole life wasn't her biological father. That must have been like an earthquake in her life. And then launching into this search for her biological family.
Wow. Yeah, finding that out would just turn your world upside down. You'd have to rethink your entire life story, your connections. And the search itself adds another whole layer of emotional complexity, doesn't it?
And the reaction she got from her biological father's relatives.
Mm.
They were all over the place. Some welcoming, some shutting her out.
Which just goes to show how unpredictable families can be, right? These big revelations can bring connection, but they can also bring more rejection, more pain.
But through all this turmoil, she reaches this incredibly powerful realization. These painful things don't have to define her. Her true self, her core identity, is still there underneath all that weight, waiting to be rediscovered.
That's such a critical turning point, isn't it? Realizing that external events, no matter how painful, they don't get to dictate who you fundamentally are. That's vital for healing.
And she includes that quote. It's so striking. There are moments which mark your life. Time is divided into two parts, before this and after this.
Hmm.
It just perfectly captures how these huge life events can feel like they split your life in two.
Yeah, that quote really nails the feeling, doesn't it? How some events just fundamentally change your landscape, creating that clear before and after.
Okay, so after going through all that, how do you actually start taking control? She introduces this idea, the remote control system. What's that about?
Right, the remote control system. This analogy comes from her own struggle, actually, trying to quit smoking after she developed asthma. Her big motivation was wanting to see her grandkids grow up. That gave her the drive.
And she talks about the struggle, right? The failed attempts, which is so relatable for anyone trying to break a habit or change a thought pattern. That feeling of being stuck.
Totally relatable. So the analogy is basically this. You can choose your thoughts, like you choose a channel on TV. You have the power to direct your focus.
And the example she gives is really clear. After quitting smoking, she'd see other people light up, and she had a choice. Focus on it, let the craving build, or deliberately look away, change her mental channel.
That's the core of it. Triggers might be out there, but you decide where to put your mental energy. You hold the remote.
So the big message is, you are in charge of the remote control for your own mind. You can change the channel, even when it feels hard.
Exactly. It's about recognizing your agency. You're not just passively receiving thoughts. You can actively influence and redirect them.
And she connects it to that pastor's quote, "What we behold, we become." Like, if you're trying to escape pain, don't keep staring at it.
Yeah, that quote reinforces how powerful our focus is. What you consistently look at, think about, it shapes your desires, your actions, even who you feel you are.
This ties into the power of suggestion too, doesn't it? She tells that story about Sue, the woman who got convinced she was sick, just from coworkers' comments.
Oh, that story is fascinating. It really shows how easily our thoughts, even our physical feelings, can be swayed by what others say, even if there's no real basis for it. Our minds are suggestible.
It's a great reminder to use that remote control actively, right?
Yeah.
To manage what we let in and not let external stuff dictate our internal state.
Absolutely. Be discerning about the info you absorb, the stories you let take root in your mind, because they really do affect your well-being.
And then there's that classic story, the two monks and the woman at the puddle. One helps her, the other judges him. And the second monk carries that judgment, that negativity, with him for ages afterwards.
It's such a simple, perfect illustration, isn't it? How we can cling to things, replay events, carry judgments long after the moment has passed. The first monk let it go immediately. The second let it weigh him down.
It's such a powerful lesson in letting go of the past, staying present. Changing that mental channel gets us closer to moving beyond the pain.
Definitely. Releasing past hurts, focusing on now. That's a crucial skill for well-being. Holding on to the past just keeps you tethered to the pain, really.
So the book then gets into breaking free from limitations. And the author argues that often it's not external things holding us back. It's our own thoughts, our own self-imposed boundaries.
Yeah, that's a key insight. We often don't realize how much our own beliefs create the walls around us. We can be our own jailers, in a way.
She uses that example of seeing a rundown car and connecting it to generational poverty. How limiting mindsets can just get passed down.
It's a stark example, isn't it? How these deeply ingrained beliefs, maybe from family or community, shape what you think is possible for yourself. They limit your vision.
And she points out how from day one, we're constantly programmed parents, teachers, society.
Yeah.
Soaking it all up like sponges.
Yeah, those early years are so formative. The messages we get bake in these core beliefs that filter how we see everything, how we act. Often for decades, that's where limitations often start.
She even quotes St. Francis Xavier, "Give me the child until he is seven and I will give you the man," really underscores the impact of those early beliefs.
It does. It highlights how powerful those foundational beliefs are. They become the lens through which we see the world and ourselves.
But here's the hopeful bit. She insists these core beliefs can be changed. It starts with spotting the negative ones and then consciously, deliberately redirecting your thoughts. Sounds like hard work, though.
Oh, it definitely takes conscious effort and practice. Just identifying those deep beliefs, it can be tricky. And then actively working to replace them. That's an ongoing process. It needs self-awareness and commitment.
She brings in those Steve Maraboli quotes, too, about letting go, forgiving yourself, forgiving the situation, recognizing when something is over so you can move on. And that powerful idea that the very thing causing pain can actually build you up.
Those quotes really pack a punch, don't they? They speak to resilience, the need to release the past, forgive, and find strength and transformation even in the really hard stuff.
And forgiveness comes up again and again as crucial. She uses that analogy, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
It's such a vivid image. And so true. Holding on to anger, unforgiveness, it mainly hurts you. It blocks your own healing much more than it affects the other person.
So what's the point of going through all this pain? She talks about finding purpose. Why is that important?
Well, she shares that her main purpose in writing the book was really to connect with others in pain, to offer them some strength, hope, maybe some direction, to help them feel understood and empower them to break free.
And she makes a good point. While pain intensity varies hugely, the actual feeling of pain, that's universal. It connects us.
That's so true. Our specific stories are different, but that core emotional hurt, the need to heal, that's something we all share as humans.
She also warns against judging someone else's pain, right? Because what seems like nothing to you could be devastating for them. Perspective is everything.
Absolutely. We all have different histories, different coping skills, different sensitivities. What rolls off one person's back can crush another. You just never know.
And we tend to feel misunderstood when people don't fully get our pain.
Yeah.
But she says, maybe we shouldn't expect them to fully get it.
Yeah. Putting that expectation on others often leads to more disappointment, doesn't it? People can only relate based on their own experiences, their own capacity.
Sometimes, she says, just having someone listen, truly listen. That's all they can offer, and that's huge. Their responses come from where they are. Expecting more can just add another layer of hurt for ourselves.
It's vital to recognize that. Others might not have the perfect words or understanding, but it doesn't mean they don't care. Their ability to help is often limited by their own stuff.
She also mentions how talking endlessly about the pain can actually keep you stuck in it. Again, it comes back to redirecting your thoughts.
Right. Constantly rehashing it can keep the wound open, prevent healing. Redirecting focus allows you to move towards something more positive.
And I love this analogy she uses. Pain is like seeds. Your thoughts are the fertilizer. Your words are the water. If you keep feeding those pain seeds with negative thoughts and words, that's what grows. You need to focus on watering joy the direction you want to go.
That's a brilliant way to put it. It really illustrates how our focus, our inner dialogue, cultivates either more pain or more healing. Shifting focus is key.
And she's realistic. Painful thoughts will probably still pop up, but the trick is not to let them set up camp. Notice them. Yep. And consciously turn your attention elsewhere.
Exactly. It's not about never having a negative thought. It's about developing the awareness to catch them, acknowledge them maybe, and then intentionally shift focus. Don't dwell there.
This all flows into the power of choice and the importance of self-love. She really emphasizes that our reaction to life's junk is a choice. Yep. And that choice shapes the results we get.
That really puts the power back in your hands, doesn't it? We can't always control what happens to us, but we always, always have a choice in how we respond. And that response makes all the difference.
She encourages spending quality time just with yourself to figure out who you really are underneath all the external noise and expectations.
Yeah, that self-reflection, that quiet time. It's so important for connecting with your inner self, clarifying what you value, what you truly need, separate from everyone else.
And she throws down this challenge. Look in the mirror every day for 30 days. Say your name. Say, I love you and I forgive you out loud to yourself. That can feel surprisingly hard for a lot of people, can't it?
Oh, it can be incredibly difficult, especially if you're used to negative self-talk. But practicing that self-compassion, those kind words, it can gradually soften that inner critic. It builds self-acceptance.
And again, the power of words as seeds. She quotes Proverbs 18.21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. It really drives home the impact of what we say inwardly and outwardly.
That verse is so potent, isn't it? It highlights the creative and destructive force of our language. Choose words that build life for yourself and others.
So it's about changing that inner dialogue, right?
Right.
Reprogramming the subconscious to align with what we actually want, not the old negative loops.
Exactly. It takes consistent effort challenging the old limiting beliefs, replacing negative self-talk with positive affirmations, visualizing what you want. That's how you start reprogramming.
She uses those funny examples like trying to shower or brush your teeth with your non-dominant hand. Mm-hmm. Just to show how automatic our subconscious routines are. It makes you think about the automatic thinking patterns too.
They're great examples. They really highlight how much we run on autopilot. Disrupting those physical routines makes you aware of the mental ones too, and that's the first step to changing them.
And that story about her husband always cleaning his plate because of his grandmother's Great Depression experiences. It shows how these unconscious beliefs, these boundaries, can control us even when the original reason is long gone.
It's a perfect illustration. These deep-seated beliefs, often from childhood or family history, just keep running the show unconsciously. Bringing them into awareness is key if you want to change them.
Okay, so finally we get to this resolution piece titled Slaying My Giant. This is about the unresolved pain with her father after the paternity discovery.
Right. This chapter tackles that very personal, very significant source of lingering pain, the estrangement from her father and her struggle with his reaction.
She describes wrestling with it internally, playing out these imaginary conversations, going from anger and wanting explanations to sadness and then sort of acceptance. It feels very real.
Yeah, the way her internal process shifts anger, sadness, acceptance, that mirrors how grief and processing difficult relationships often unfolds, doesn't it? It's complex.
And living in a small town, that added another layer, didn't it? People knowing your business, the well-meaning, but maybe intrusive comments must have made it harder.
Oh, for sure. Small towns can amplify everything. Hard to have privacy, and you get the extra pressure of public awareness and opinions.
The turning point comes when her aunt gets sick and passes away. It forces her to face seeing her father after 8 years apart. That must have been intense.
Yeah, that event becomes the catalyst, right? It forces the issue, brings everything to a head, creates this moment where confrontation, or at least encounter, feels unavoidable.
She talks about this internal basketball game questions bouncing back and forth and realizing she hadn't truly forgiven him. The hurt was still there.
That basketball game analogy is great. It captures that inner turmoil perfectly, and the realization that just letting time pass isn't always enough for real forgiveness. The emotional release hadn't happened yet.
And then she makes this conscious choice, a deliberate act of surrendering the hurt, the pain. And it brings this incredible feeling of freedom, of peace. Forgiveness wasn't just an idea, it was an action.
That moment of choosing to surrender the pain, to forgive, it's presented as truly transformative, a real emotional release, liberation from the past.
And the actual encounter at the funeral is so brief, just a nod, but it floods her with peace. That giant she'd been carrying lost its power.
It's a powerful moment of resolution. The brief nod signifies that the internal work, the forgiveness, brought this unexpected peace and closure to something that had caused so much pain for so long.
She really emphasizes that forgiveness was the key to her healing. And she strongly encourages you, the listener, to think about any unforgiveness you might be holding on to.
Yeah, the focus on forgiveness as the absolute linchpin of her healing really highlights its power to free us from the past and let us move forward.
And it's so important to get this right. Forgiveness is about freeing yourself. It's not saying what happened was okay. It's an act of self-liberation.
That's the crucial distinction, isn't it? It's not about excusing bad behavior. It's about releasing yourself from the poison of resentment and bitterness, which mostly harms you.
Her final thought there is just,
yeah,
leave the past behind. Celebrate the present. Don't keep carrying that old baggage.
It's about reclaiming your energy for now, isn't it? Letting go allows you to fully show up for your life today, unburdened by yesterday's pain.
So the final chapter moves towards hope and connection. Where to now? This is where she talks about her personal relationship with Yeshua Jesus Christ being the biggest factor in overcoming everything and finding real hope.
Right. In this last part, she brings her personal faith front and center as the core element in her healing and her source of enduring hope.
And she stresses the difference between just knowing about God and really knowing God personally, that experiential heart connection.
It's that difference between intellectual belief and a lived personal relationship, right? Which for many people offers a much deeper sense of meaning and support.
She talks about dying to self and how in that deeper relationship, obedience isn't about obligation or fear, but flows naturally from love, a shift in motivation.
Yeah, that idea of dying to self often means letting go of ego, of self-centeredness, to align with something bigger than yourself. Which can bring a different kind of freedom, a different purpose.
And she's honest about her past struggles, selfishness, fear of vulnerability, and how her view of God and faith changed over time. It wasn't instant.
Her honesty makes it relatable, doesn't it? It shows spiritual growth is often a journey, a process of learning and questioning and transforming over time.
She describes a wilderness experience, letting go of old ideas, traditions, to find a more personal connection with God, stripping things back to the core.
That wilderness idea often represents a time of stripping away the non-essential, the familiar comforts, leading to a more authentic encounter with faith or with yourself, often a time of major growth.
And she contrasts being motivated by fear versus being motivated by love and adoration. That shift changed everything for her.
Moving from fear to love as the driving force in faith, that can lead to a much more genuine, fulfilling experience. More about connection and trust than anxiety.
She uses the analogy of panning for gold, in God's word, actively digging for deeper meaning and answers.
I like that analogy. It suggests that real understanding, valuable insights, they often take effort, patience, actively seeking and reflecting.
And she shares this profound sense of God's constant love, his presence, even when she messed up. That feeling of unconditional acceptance.
That experience of unconditional divine love, even when we feel unworthy. That's a cornerstone for many faiths, a powerful source of comfort and hope.
She brings in the story of the woman caught in adultery as this potent example of God's compassion, forgiveness, grace, and she invites you to put yourself in that woman's shoes.
It's a powerful story, isn't it? Really illustrates that possibility of a fresh start, of compassion overriding condemnation. Asking the listener to step into it makes it hit harder emotionally.
And she finishes by asking directly, have you ever really given your heart to Yeshua Jesus? And offers a simple prayer for anyone who feels drawn to that.
That direct invitation, the prayer, It offers a clear next step for anyone listening who resonates with her faith journey and wants to explore it.
She suggests finding a supportive community, reading the Gospel of John, practical steps for building that foundation.
Yeah, suggesting community and scripture gives concrete guidance for nurturing faith and finding support along the way.
And her final word is just emphasizing God's boundless love and the real possibility of finding joy, finding peace on the other side of pain through that faith connection, a message of hope.
It brings it all back to hope, doesn't it? The belief that faith can be this powerful resource for navigating pain and finding lasting joy and meaning.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into On the Other Side of Your Pain, a few things really stand out for me. First, just how much power we actually have over our thoughts. Learning to use that internal remote control seems like such a fundamental step.
Absolutely. Becoming aware of your thought patterns, actively redirecting the negative ones. It's foundational for taking charge of your inner world.
Second, the power of forgiveness. For others, sure, but maybe especially for ourselves. It's not about forgetting, but about freeing yourself from that weight.
Forgiveness really is key, isn't it? It unlocks you from the past, releases that emotional burden, and lets you actually move forward into peace.
And finally, how we see ourselves, that self-perception piece. Cultivating self-compassion, self-love, recognizing your own worth, it seems crucial for building resilience.
Definitely. Being kind and accepting toward yourself builds that inner strength you need. How you view yourself colors everything, especially how you handle challenges.
So remember, getting through pain is possible, even when it feels absolutely overwhelming. You have that inner strength. The book's title says it all, really. On the other side of your pain, there's another side. There's hope.
The journey itself is proof of resilience, isn't it? Holding on to hope, knowing your own strength, that's what gets you through to that other side.
So as you go about your day, maybe just reflect on some of this. How could these ideas apply in your own life? Maybe revisit some points, see what sticks.
Yeah, taking a moment to reflect, see how these principles resonate with your own experiences. That can spark some really valuable insights for your own growth.
And here's a final thought to chew on. What giant in your life are you maybe feeling ready to face now, knowing that freedom often lies just beyond that confrontation? Or think about that remote control for your mind. What channel are you going to consciously choose to tune into today moving forward?
Those are powerful questions, aren't they? Identifying those giants, consciously directing your focus. Those are empowering actions that can really shift things for you.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. We really hope it offered some valuable insights, maybe a little bit of renewed hope for your own journey.